call will now be recorded. Please go ahead. Thank you.
I'll do a quick roll call for you, Ray.
Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Ray Fafard, Ron Androff, Avery Doria, Wolf Ulrich Norben. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I don't have any apologies for today. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Ray.
Great. Thank you, Casella. So a bit of housekeeping first. I think everybody's aware we do have an in-person meeting set up now for the ICANN public meeting in Nairobi. It is on March 7th at 9 a.m. local time. I don't have the room arrangement yet. I don't think I do anyway, but that will be coming to us in the near term. And I believe Avery has kindly accepted chairing that meeting for that day, which I sincerely appreciate. And I will do my best to participate remotely that day. And it's not unfeasible time zone-wise either. I believe it's four-hour difference or something like that. So, and well, there's a preliminary agenda. I think everybody saw that link of what it is. And the last thing is anybody on the call, do they know today of whether or not they have a conflict for that time on Sunday in Nairobi? Wolf, is there a conflict for you at that time?
No, I will be there.
Oh, okay, good. Great. All right, so that's that bit of housekeeping. I think we should, as an agenda today, jump right in. Well, is Ken Bauer is probably not on the call, right? Well, I have the meeting view. I would know that.
This is Julie. I don't see Ken on the call. I thought he had planned to attend. Maybe I'll send him a jabber to see if he's planning on joining us as well.
Yeah, specifically I'm looking for an update on getting the abstention procedure that we put together, and he is going back and forth with at our request with ICANN legal counsel, getting that in front of the OSC so that we can get it in front of the council as part of the Nairobi meeting. So I want to stay on top of that. If Julie, if you could just find out from Ken, I'm trying to nail down when we should send this to the OSC, stating in the affirmative that ICANN legal counsel has looked at it and does not foresee any material changes or whatever blessing we need to get from ICANN legal, so that we can communicate that to OSC, that will give them the comfort level to go ahead and recommend it over to the GENISL council.
Right. This is Julie. Ray, I've just heard from Ken. He is planning on joining the call. He'll be here shortly, and I'm sure he'll be able to give us an update.
Okay, so let's move that agenda item down to the last. Somebody can remind me as we get closer to the 1 o'clock hour. We'll try and stay to an hour. If someone could remind me, let's bring that back up, 10 minutes to the hour. Because let's go now right into the SOI documents, unless anybody objects. And open that up for discussion and comment. I have a discussion item, but I'll ask if anybody else has a discussion item. If not, I will jump to where we kind of left off last week when we talked, which has to do with this sort of concept that has to do with privacy, as mentioned by Samantha. Her exact quote is, there has to be some allowance for confidentiality here in the publication of statement of interest forms, where she goes on to say, I don't think that we should require, as a precursor to participation in ICANN, that people should have this information publicly available. Ron Androff made a counter comment to that, which is, unless we have stringent rules, we have nothing. What is needed is a reality check by using the GCOT as guinea pigs to see how we like the outcome. Now, with that said, I think each of us were supposed to go through. There are five questions. If we all have the document open, there were five questions that basically everybody would have to complete, as a statement of interest form. Then how long would it take, and how cumbersome would that be? I did do that exercise, and it took me 15 minutes. So I'm sharing with you what I did. Did anybody else do the exercise?
I think I might have.
Yeah, this is Ron. I did as well. That was the same, 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
Wolf?
Sorry, I didn't.
Okay. Okay, well, unless we hear from people that have done this that it is too cumbersome, my own personal experience was it's not too cumbersome. And then I think the secondary question becomes, okay, well, should it be made public? I think that's what Samantha is raising here in this privacy. I don't think that we should require as a precursor to participation in ICANN that people should have this information publicly available. I want to throw that out for comment. We have, Ron's sort of counter opinion to that. We have, and I think these are opinions too, by the way. This is coming from Samantha, who's ICANN's legal, but it seems to me an opinion. So we're evaluating here an opinion. Not a legal opinion, just an opinion. Can we have a quick discussion on this? Anybody have any thoughts on this?
Ray, this is Ron.
Yes, Ron.
As you said, it took 15 minutes to do this thing, and when you look at the questions themselves, they're relatively innocuous. Current employer and positions, that's on our ICANN wiki right now. So, anybody who's signed up to ICANN wiki, it already states that, so it's in public domain. Types of work performed at the above, if I'm the president of the company, I oversee the management operations of the company. Then you get into number three, identify ownership or investment and then compensation. This is not to say how much am I getting paid or how much do I own. I own 80% of the company. That's not what this is about. It's to say, yes, I have an ownership interest in this entity or with the entity that is doing a transaction. So it's just to confirm that I have an ownership interest or I have no ownership interest. With regard to compensation, yes, I'm compensated or no, I'm not compensated. So I think that she may be reading more into this thing than we're trying to achieve. But from my point of view, it was really a yes or no questions to these things to kind of ascertain from where Ron Andrew is coming when he's responding to a specific topic or, issue. So that's how I saw it. I saw it as a more... a document that's a little bit more yes-no as opposed to being so detailed. So that's why I don't see this as being so difficult to put out there. It's not like this information is not in the public interest or public domain already.
Okay. Aubrey, what do you think?
I think that if it is just the binary, reading what's there, you can easily interpret that it's looking for more,
mm-hmm.
And it's looking for detailed information on those things, which
mm-hmm.
would be inappropriate. But I think the binary questions are okay.
Maybe then it's a matter of format. Should we outline those into questions? Please provide a yes or no question to each of the following. Do you have an ownership or investment interest in any entity with which ICANN has a transaction? Yes or no?
Right.
Yeah.
Have
a contract.
Identified now. It says identify any compensation arrangement.
Yeah.
Well, that could be taken to mean tell me how much you make.
Yeah. So maybe it's a formatting issue.
I would say so, Ray. I would agree with you if it was just listed as with yes no and just put in that format. And so like right now it's five questions, but there are multiple questions within a question. Maybe it turns out to be a list of 15 questions.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it'd be three. We'll call it a category, identification of interest, I don't know, and then 3A, 3B, 3C, 3E, something like that.
Question on this, Aubrey, again?
Yes, Aubrey, go ahead.
Is it really just yes, no? I think I'm probably fine with that, or do we need to say what company?
What company, Aubrey? This is Ron. I agree. We need to say I'm president and CEO of RNA Partners. RNA Partners has is intending to apply for a top-level domain .sport. So there is detail there, but not to the extent that it's not already in the public domain.
Right. Okay.
So there would be if yes, yes or no, ownership or investment in interest, yes or no, and then if yes, identify. Identify the entity.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, somebody could put no there, then they don't have to answer.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Ron, you just said something, though, I'm not sure clear about. Is it really necessary, for example, in this for you to say, like, yeah, we are considering filing for a top-level domain?
Well, there's the part that, let me see, it's more in the number three, maybe it is. Let's see, potential ownership investment compensation agreement, individual that can negotiate. So it's basically the idea here is that to try to clarify where we have an interest in the outcome, where I have an interest in the outcome, so that it's been stated publicly. So I'm just trying to find where the exact wording was, but number five, for example, just says whether the relevant party has a particular interest in or will receive a tangible benefit from policy outcomes for issues under consideration. In this case, we're discussing elements of policy around new top-level domains. So it's really with whatever the topic is that's on the table at that time, as I understand it. So this is really my statement of interest in that topic. And then the disclosure of interest is, again, the same is situation. If you go back up to the top to definitions, that's where I'm looking at this now. Disclosure made under disclosure of interest,
yeah.
It says disclosure made of party of any direct or indirect interest may be commercially or non-commercially oriented. And so it's really falling into those categories, just defining. As those definitions are, we just need to ask questions that will reflect back on those definitions.
Okay, so let me think about this. Let's try some living examples. Who can I pick on? I'll pick on Microsoft. I'm a trademark lawyer for Microsoft, and I'm not for this new GTLD process at all. How would and this party wants to submit, of course, a statement through to the now this is a good point here, and I kind of just picked up on this recently. This the scope of this is only related to matters under the GNSL, right? So if ICANN is holding a public comment process for expressions of interest, which is not under the GNSL, this whole thing of statements of interest is moot, right?
Correct. The statements of interest and declarations of interest speak to the issue of when we're sitting around the table at a GNSO meeting or a work team meeting or some kind of other grouping that's been gathered together to work on a specific task. It's under those circumstances that everyone needs to have something filed. But someone that's just making a public comment on EOI, as you just suggested, that's any person under the sun can make that comment without any issue. It's a comment they're making in that public forum. Now, the other question, though, was when people come up to the open mic, and I think this is where Wolf Ulrich was a little bit concerned, was that if I come to the open mic and I make a statement, any individual theoretically can walk up to the open mic and make a statement. But
yeah, to the board.
To
the ICANN board.
Exactly.
But the GNSO also has an open mic.
Yes, exactly. And so this is where we have to make that differentiation, as I see it. That if you know, it's the board statement is just any person can make a comment about whatever they want. But when we start getting into GNSO level in theory, we're drilling down a little deeper into formulating something, policy or whatever that might be. So that's how I saw it more on that side, that when there's work teams or GNSO or public open mic at GNSO, those kinds of things, that people have filed a statement of interest, because now you're kind of in a work environment as opposed to just a public statement environment.
Right.
That was the distinction I drew in any case.
Right. So let's stick with the GNSO open mic situation at these ICANN meetings. Right now, someone is to come up and state their full name, and that's really all it's asked. We might offer the idea that you, the chair of the council, says to the person, people come to the mic, please state your name and state whether you have submitted a statement of interest. And they could say, my name is Ray Fassett. No, I have not submitted a statement of interest. Now, go ahead and talk. At least everybody now who is listening or will review later will have the intelligence that the party has not submitted a statement of interest. So if I say I have submitted a statement of interest, reasonably speaking, I would think that what I'm saying has a little bit more credibility. So that's the distinction. So
but
we don't want
somebody were to try to kind of hide behind that loophole to say, you know, I'm here and I'm an active participant in the ICANN process, but I didn't submit a SOI just so that I don't have to disclose who I'm working for.
Well, me, the reader or the listener to that might say, all right, well, I'll hear your comment, but I'm not going to take it as much weight as somebody who's making comments that has. In other words, I don't know if we can make it bulletproof on the one hand, and on the other, you know, I don't think we should, through the procedures, inhibit, and I'll just use Nairobi as an example, somebody local in Nairobi who's just trying to learn about the ICANN processes and is coming to participate, and then they can't speak at the microphone because they didn't even know about this whole idea of a statement of interest. So go ahead and let them speak. It's just that allow the audience, the reader, the listener, to weigh in their own independent view whether it matters or not.
Mr. Alfred, can I comment?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I guess I don't see the reason for the statement of interest for the person standing in line. I think that statement of interest should be filed, should be where people can find them. Any one of the, you know, people that cares to check and see whether a speaker has filed one can do so. But I tend to think it would be intimidating for the sort of cross-section and cross-dialogue that we'd like to have, whether it's an ALAC or a GAC person speaking. Certainly, I think, you know, and we do ask for name and affiliation, and I think that is good. So somebody says, I'm so-and-so, and I'm a GAC member, or, you know, I'm the Rallo from East Asia, or whatever. That is good, but to go, or, you know, hi, I'm local, and I'm, you know, from Nairobi, and I'm interested in. But to go further than that starts to be almost intimidation that I'm going to question you on whether you're one of us or not, and whether you've done this. We can all check, as long as we've got them in a repository, we can all check. But I'm sort of worried about this being something that stifles comment as opposed to making it richer.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I support that too, Avery. This is Ron. But I have a question, Avery. As you were the chair of the GNSO, in your experience, when the only time that people are actually speaking at the microphone is kind of when the GNSO does the briefing on the Saturday or the Sunday meeting, whatever, you know, the early meeting, correct?
There's a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
I don't know that Chuck will organize the meeting the same way, but certainly for each topic, there was an open mic time on that topic, and then there was a general open mic time for 45 minutes to an hour at the end of the meeting.
At the end of your meeting, you mean, or at the end of the ICANN meeting?
No, at the end of
your meetings, the GNSO meeting.
The Wednesday open, you know, the one where everybody sits on the stage like a microphone.
No, I would be inclined to agree with what you've just said. I mean, the idea, this certainly is about opening and being more transparent. It's not about trying to separate, you know, people into groups. So I agree with that. As I say, I was coming back more to the point that, you know, all GNSO representatives would have to have these things filed, and just to make sure that everybody understood who was speaking for whom, and then any work team members would then be requested to file SOI, DOI documentation so that people knew where they were coming from. So that was what I envisioned in my mind's eye originally.
Mm-hmm.
But it still kind of bothers me that sometimes people within our community, and we know who they are because people are wearing so many multiple hats, sometimes they're speaking for themselves, sometimes they're lobbying for a client, sometimes they're doing something else, and it would have been nicer if we could kind of sort out which one is which, as opposed to, or put them on the spot to have them declare that, as opposed to us trying to sort it out. that's where I was trying to see this thing go. But as you say, as you speak right now, Avery, I think you're probably right. We're going to find ourselves in a we're pushing this in the wrong direction.
Okay, so let me ask this question. Is it clear in 3.2 that what is contained below for the statement of interest does not apply to the open mic?
No.
Okay, so we need to add that clarity.
Yeah, I agree. This is Avery. I agree that it's for anybody participating in a team, in a group, in a whatever organized activity.
Okay, so now we're going to make it clear to actually define where it applies, not where it does not apply, but actually define where it does apply.
Yeah, I would say something like for any GNSO organized activity, such as drafting team, working team, working group,
mm-hmm.
and because it says, who knows, somebody may invent a new name for organized working activity, down the road, because we're doing something and it isn't the same as the things before, but this would still apply.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be an organized working,
Okay, so then
organized
and then
activity, or however one would want to put it.
Right. But, okay. So with that said, is it clear that it's required for anybody?
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Who's that?
Yeah, Ray, this is Julie. I just, could I get in the queue?
Oh, please go ahead.
I have a relevant comment. You'll note that as far as what this policy applies to or to whom it applies, in our definitions at the top of the document, we do define what is a relevant party, and these procedures then apply to a relevant party. We say a relevant party is an individual who participates as a member of a team, working group, committee member, or other such policy development bodies formed by and under the supervision of the GNSO, as well as all elected and appointed members of the GNSO Policy Council. My question is, do we need a further definition in Section 3? Is it not clear that the following sections then, and the following procedures then apply to relevant parties as defined above?
Mm-hmm. Probably not. I think that probably would be duplicative. As long as we cite down in 3.2, which we do, I believe we do, relevant parties, yes, we do. Wait a minute, I can't say shall development provide two relevant parties, right? And then the only other question I would have then is, do we say it's required in order to participate? I think that is the spirit, right? We're saying that anybody who is a relevant party is required to provide a statement of interest. And then ICANN is required to post these statements of interest. Am I correct or discussion?
This is Ron. I think that Julie, she hit the nail on the head. The relevant party is well defined there, but if we were to add the relevant an individual who participates in a work team, blah, 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 would be is required to fill this in or add that sentence in there, that would be very helpful, because this is a requirement to be on a work team. You need to state who you are, what your affiliations are, and that's where you're coming from, so everybody's clear. What we're trying to achieve here is transparency. So if we don't have that in there, I think that should be added in.
This is Julie. What we say in Section 3 is, say, 3.1, relevant parties shall provide to the GNSO Secretariat a statement of interest, et cetera, et cetera. But we could strengthen that and say relevant parties are required to provide, et cetera, et cetera, if we want to make that stronger.
Oh, yeah, or are obligated to provide. In order to become a relevant party, you have an obligation, and I agree with that.
I think I would probably prefer, just for clarity, are required. And then what that does is put, I think, a burden on the chair people, whether it's a working group, a task force, or whatever it is, to tidy that up and make sure that that's done by all the people that are participating.
Now, I'm assuming, this is Ron, I'm assuming that the way we're going to be going forward is very similar to the way our work team is operating, that any other work team that comes up, there will be this wiki, there will be this place where community members can go and look and go back and listen to recordings and so forth. So perhaps that's where there's a link there back to these SOI documents or something, so that it's very, you know, here's a list of the work team, and click here, you'll get their SOI.
Yeah, that's an approach. I don't know how granular we want to get, but I suppose in my brain, I was thinking that ICANN would have maybe in its drop-down box on its homepage, statements of interest, click on that, then you got A through Z, and then if you're looking for a specific party, you find them.
Yeah,
but I don't know if we want to get granular like
no,
that.
No, I mean, it's not our job, but I just thinking it all through from the beginning to the end, and I think that's probably what will happen, and I think if we were able to just, you know, each work team just links back with their name back to that spot. The whole point here, then again, is everyone's able to review that information very easily without having to go dig for it on the ICANN site and try to figure out where it might be. Mm-hmm. It might be very simple with the drop-down box, statements of interest, but then again, you know, we live in a world where people get confused pretty easily.
Yeah, especially me. Okay, so I don't see. Okay, so what are the two things we want to do? We want to make it strengthen the language for it to be required for relevant parties.
Yes.
The scope, I think, is properly addressed in the definition of relevant party. And then the other thing would be to go into 3.3 and modify that to be more, especially number 3 in 3.3. And perhaps in other questions, but to break those out into more yes or no, and then if yes, provide an answer.
Correct.
Okay, so Julie, are you able to work on that for us?
Yes, sorry.
On that last action item?
Yeah, sorry, I was taking myself off mute. This is Julie. Yes, actually, I have the document up right now. I'm saving it as a new version. I've made the change to are required, and then I've taken as an action item to rewrite the question section, the 3.3 section, to conform to a yes or no answer type of format, and including a if yes, then, you know, what type of format.
And I think the spirit of why we're asking that to be done is to bring some level of reasonableness on this issue of confidentiality. Like, no, we're not. This isn't about disclosing your life's history. This is simply about answering some very basic questions that really should not compromise confidentiality, privacy. That's the spirit, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have anything else for 3.3. Anybody else?
No.
Wolf, you're being quiet over there. Are you okay?
Yes. So I'm in line with you. Yeah.
Okay. My next question, I'll go ahead, has to do with 4.4. Now, this one to me is a little circular, because we start out with, if it is determined that a relevant party, then the chair or vice chair will take such, you know, these actions. My first question is, who's making that determination? I can see somebody coming forward and saying, I think that this person did not disclose a direct or indirect interest, but that's different than a determination. So there needs to be a determination, and once the determination is made, then the chair or vice chair takes X action.
So if I understand you, Ray, this is Ron, we're trying to establish what is the mechanism to bring forward this determination?
Yeah, right. Somebody has to make a determination.
Somebody has to make a comment to somebody.
Yeah.
And then there will be a determination that it is, you know, so or not so.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
And this is where it gets challenging, because it becomes now a policing function.
Well, maybe it actually goes back to 4.3. Maybe it's a tag on at the end of the second paragraph in 4.3, because the chair is asking if there is any disclosure, if there's any disclosures of interest that we should be aware of. And then we should be maybe putting a note that it should probably fall in there, because 4.4 reads pretty clearly. The, you know, that follows on, but that element about how we get to that determination should needs to be added. Maybe it's 4.3.1, or it's another, or we just renumber them, but that's where the paragraph goes between those two paragraphs, 4.3 and 4.4.
And what are you suggesting it would say?
I'm not quite there yet, but basically it's saying that should a member of the community member of the community, because this is all addressing the community, feel that, and this, you know, just talking off the top of my head, should a member of the community feel that a disclosure or is lacking, or a statement of interest is incorrect, they would then bring that to the attention of blank for review.
Can I make another suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
In all my time as chair, I think it happened twice. And what happened was during the period when I asked, you know, does anybody need to update their statement of interest? No, it was called statement of interest, not disclosure of interest. Please speak up. And twice someone asked a question about someone else.
Mm-hmm.
One of the times it was about me. And so perhaps just the sentence could be changed so encourage all participants, you know, to update, you know, all disclosures of interest prior to beginning their remarks, questions about people's disclosure of interest are permissible at that time.
But then what happens after that, Avery, then from that it's
then,
brought
then
up at that time, but then how do we get to it that it's now been determined? What would be the next?
I mean, that you can sort of leave that open. I mean, a question comes up, they'll respond to it or not respond to it, and then it falls into four where the chairs and vice chairs have to follow up on it. And I don't know that you need a formal procedure for that. A question's been raised. And so if it's been determined, and that determination would have to be made by the vice chairs and chair. So I don't know that we need to get terribly formal about it. Just the fact that a question's been raised.
I can agree with you, because the language further on there does say that the chair in consultation with the vice chair
may ask non-disclosing. So basically, if, you know, after that exchange, they determine. And just by allowing in 4.3 that someone can ask a question about someone, you know, actually, more often than that, there were a couple questions, you know, please explain, what does this mean, et cetera. But...
And did those parties come forward then?
They came forward. A couple times they came forward right then, and once, you know, a written thing was sent in later. You know, and on mine, I had started being an affiliate with some company that did some ICANN work, even though I wasn't doing ICANN work for them. So I had to add a line to say, while I work for Inner Isle, I am, you know, Chinese walled away from any of their ICANN stuff.
Well, I support that. I support Aubrey's approach.
Can somebody summarize it for me?
Yeah, basically just add a clause to 4.3 saying that, you know, that is the time for other participants to ask any questions they have about someone's disclosure.
So it's another sentence after the sentence finishes with beginning their remarks, prior to beginning their remarks, and that's where that gets added in.
Or it could be a merge sentence, you know, but I don't care.
That makes sense.
Because you could have taken the previous sentence that said, you know, shall encourage all participants to update and ask questions about disclosures of interest. You know, you can phrase it that way, and then it's just a couple extra words in the sentence.
Yeah, that's the place for it to happen before the meeting gets underway.
Right. And I prefer prefer something that, that calls a question as opposed to it starting accusatory that you're not disclosing. It you know, somebody may just have a question and it gets asked.
So in 4.3, any person may question a relevant party's statement of interest. At the beginning of any ICANN public meeting, forum, or discussion, anyone may question a relevant party's statement of interest. Something like that?
At the beginning of any public meeting. No, well, why don't we just pick it up and say, you know, prior to beginning the remarks, at that time, anyone feeling, or, you know, find the appropriate language, but let me just say it out. Anyone feeling that or has a question with regard to an SOI of any other member of that group, work team, whatever, or maybe a relevant party, would bring that forward at this time or something. But the key here is that, you see, we have this phrase here, ICANN public meeting forum or discussion. And this is where we started this whole dialogue. Does someone have to have an SOI to be saying that? So really what we're saying is the chair, at the beginning of any of these kind of discussions, will then invite people to provide disclosures of interest if they have one with regard to this. Anyone who feels that or has a question with regard to a disclosure of interest from the relevant party, because it really comes back to who's ever on that work team, whoever's on the GNSO. It's not, I'm not going to ask to a Nigerian, do you have an SOI? Why don't you have one? Because that person's just asking a question. They have no relevance to that. But the work team or the GNSO counselor, they are a relevant party. So if anybody has a question with regard to a relevant party's disclosure of interest, they would make it at that time, or they would bring that to the chair's attention.
Okay.
Do you understand
yep.
the distinction?
Yeah, I think I do. I think mm-hmm. I do. Julie, do you understand the distinction?
Well, it was speaking. So for me, it's not clear, because I understood 4.2 and 4.3. The one, 4.2 is, I understood, related to members of work teams and so on, yeah?
Right.
In those two. 4.3 related to anybody else who is participating in a forum meeting or discussion. Huh? What you are just discussing is, I understood, it's a search part. If somebody has a question with regards to a DOI of under 4.2,
Okay, right. You're correct. Well, if I just read that through, I beg your pardon. I would suggest that what I've just said should be 4.2, not 4.3. Correct. You're correct.
Mm-hmm.
I beg your pardon. I didn't read 4.2, but that is correct.
Okay, summarize it again for me.
Okay, so what I was saying about the idea that that the chair that anyone who would like to question the disclosure of interest would then advise the chair, period, would go into 4.2 at the very end of that paragraph, not 4.3, because my point was in 4.3 we can't ask anyone speaking at a public forum to update their disclosure of interest when in fact they may not even have one.
Okay, so we'll update 4.2 with the concept, which I think is reasonable, unless somebody objects. Now, a question I have, though, then, is can someone do so privately to the chair? I have an issue with somebody on some given work team. I don't want to make it public that I have this issue with somebody on that work team. I want to communicate to you privately that I have this issue for you to investigate or do what you do. Is that any thoughts
on that? I can certainly see why you'd want to do it. Why people might want to do it privately, because they have relationships and they don't want to upset.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. This is Aubrey. I don't see any reason why not. I don't know that we need something special for that, because that's another way. If somebody goes to a vice chair or chair and says, you know, I'm just not sure, I've seen signs, whatever, the chair or vice chair does background investigation, decides, yeah, it's warranted or no, it's not.
I agree with that. And what we may be saying is that the keep it little, as Avi said, we don't have to make these things so tight. So maybe it was something along the lines that that individual will bring that to the chair's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they do it privately or publicly, that's at their discretion.
Believe me, people bring lots of to the chair's attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people do. I can imagine that. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is a certain level of accountability now by the chair. The chair has a lot of discretion to say, well, I'm going to ignore this or not ignore this.
No, well, we've said here that the chair has to then, in consultation with the vice chair, so we would have two people colluding, in fact, if that were the case,
mm-hmm.
to say we're not going to look at this. That would put, that just brings another measure of accountability, in my view.
Yeah, you may be able to change 4.4, make it easier. If it is determined that relevant party may not have disclosed, and then it, you know.
Right.
Uh-huh.
May not have disclosed a direct or indirect interest.
Right. Then you go down further in this long run on sentence, any action by blah blah blah. You know the.
Okay.
May, if warranted, ask the non-disclosing relevant party to provide a disclosure.
Okay. So, lessen up the strictness of 4.4 by using may.
Yeah, may have not
disclosed. If it is determined, I think that's okay.
And then it's really up to the chairs and vice chairs. And you do have the safeguard of accountability of the person that spoke in private is going to get more and more agitated and escalate it more and more.
Good point.
Get an answer. Definitely seen that happen.
Okay. I'm comfortable with that stuff. Wolf, how about you?
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
So, Ray, this is Julie. Maybe I can go over and make sure I've captured these changes correctly.
Mm-hmm. Sure, please.
So I have changes in 4.2. I heard a couple of different things, and let me see if I've captured them correctly. Reading 4.2, the GNSO council chair, vice chair, working group chairs, work team chairs, committee chairs, and chairs of any other organizations formed by the GNSO shall remind all participants to provide disclosures of interest. And I added and updates to disclosures of interest because I think that was something that that Avery noted at the beginning of each meeting, during which the relevant parties will discuss or act upon the specific matters to which the disclosure pertains. And this disclosure shall be recorded in the minutes of that meeting. And the next sentence says all parties should be polled for an affirmation that there is no change to their respective. And that says SOIs, disclosures of interest. And the response is recorded in all minutes. And then I added, at that time, anyone who has a question with regard to a disclosure of interest from the relevant party will advise the chair. Does that sound correct?
I would say rather than advise the chair, that sounds like I need to speak out right now. It will make the chair aware or will, maybe I'm splitting hairs here.
We'll communicate to the chair.
We'll communicate that to the chair. That's a better way.
Okay.
And I wonder if that should be SOIs and DOIs there. Julie, you just caught that SOI and you went, no, that should be DOI?
Talking about disclosures of interest in this section.
Right, then that's the DOI.
Right.
This is operating.
Communicate that to the chair.
Mm-hmm. This is a question I've got, and I think it's partly because I didn't pay a lot of attention a long time ago. I'm not clear on the difference between an SOI and a DOI now.
Let me try. I think Ron can do better, but I'm going to try because Ron has taught me.
Well, there's also definitions at the top of the document.
Oh, okay.
Oh, darn. You were supposed to let down it all. Okay. So a statement of interest is sort of the ongoing document that people submit. It's more general. Okay, while we are asking specific questions in the statement of interest, it's more of a living document, if you will. But then from time to time, a certain issue arises that is of material impact to a relevant party. And at that moment, what we're expecting in terms of accountability and transparency is for that relevant party now, you're given an opportunity by the chair to say, hey, look, I got to disclose an interest here in the outcome of this matter. Whereas a statement of interest allows me to participate in the work group or the work team and be involved with this, provide my expertise, et cetera. But at some points where you start going down the path of whatever the initiative is about, the policy is about, a situation could arise where, well, I better not participate in that part of it because that I have to disclose that I have a benefit on the outcome of that specific piece to what is under discussion.
So I don't just add that to my SOI.
No, let me give you an example.
Yeah, maybe that wasn't very good. All right.
No, let me give you an example. I think you said it right, Ray, but I'll give you kind of an example of what that might be.
Okay.
Let's say that I am a registry operator, and it's all in my SOI. I'm a registry operator. I have this role with the company, and these are my tasks and so forth. And now there's a thing before the board or the GNSO or whatever, and the discussion is another registry is applying for some special ability to do something. And then I go to the microphone and say, you know, this is a really good thing, and I really support that we should do this. The disclosure of interest would be, and by the way, should this go through, we get a benefit too. Now, this is kind of a simple explanation, but it's just to say that if I'm supporting this, and not because I'm supporting that company, but in fact, if the board were to approve that, then I'm going to ask for this special exemption for my TLD as well. That's a disclosure of interest because the topic that's being discussed will impact us, but it's not part of my statement of interest. I don't have anything to do with that other registry. They're merely doing what they do, but I'm speaking in strong support of it because, in fact, we would have a benefit too. So, again, it's coming back to being more transparent. I'm not speaking to support that other organization as much as I'm speaking to support that idea because it will benefit my organization. Does that help clarify it a little bit?
Partially, but I guess so. And these things would be treated and these things would be written up and they would be filed. And so we're talking about maintaining two separate lists, databases, what have you, one of the SOIs and one of the DOIs. Does one take a DOI and tack it onto the bottom of an SOI? If I cover, and I guess mm-hmm. I'm confused about how we handle these things.
SOIs are public documents that are in the record, as I see it, and a DOI is something that would... I'm sorry.
These are just ad hoc statements that people would make?
Exactly. A DOI was just noted in the public record.
Okay, I got it.
No, that would have been a simple explanation, wouldn't it, Aubrey? That would have cleared it up for you. Statements of interest are formally things people have to fill out, will be submitted as a form, posted on a website, whereas a declaration of interest is not that. It's ad hoc. It's disclosing a statement of interest at the time the chair is asking for such things.
Actually,
so does that help explain the difference?
Therefore, that wouldn't happen at the beginning of a meeting. That would happen at the point at which you were actually talking about the topic.
Probably. You know, in the case that, let's use another example, right now there's been the dialogue with regard to whether the board should be compensated or not. And so I've spoken at those particular meetings, not the public forum, but those are the meetings where that discussion is happening. And so Ray just used the right word. He says the disclosure. So I would say, my name is Ron Andruff, RNA Partners, and in the interest of full disclosure, we may or may not be applying for a new top-level domain. I would like to say I support the issue of the chairman getting paid. So I've disclosed that I'm actually an applicant, so take that out of the way. It's not like I'm just telling this thing the chair should get paid so that he'll have a look at me fondly and try to help our cause when he can. I'm disclosing right from the get-go that we may have a, we'll put an application in, but bottom line is I support this from our, you know, my personal point of view or our corporate point of view, but I'm disclosing the fact that we're also involved in that. So it's just, again, transparency.
Okay, I've got another question on that one as well.
Sure. Go ahead, Aubrey.
If on that particular example, let's say I've got my name in with NomCom to become a director. Would I have to disclose that also, since obviously I'm commenting, I'm also hoping I get picked for the board. Am I under obligation to say, and by the way, I've put my name into the super secret process to become a director?
That would be, I would think that would be a disclosure of interest, yes.
So you would expect that anyone
yes.
that speaks on the topic in Nairobi of board executive compensation would have to say whether they wanted to be a director or not?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so with that said, there's no hard and fast rules. I think if people are regular participants in ICANN, say, which we want, right, the more people effectuate these things, do these things, the more credibility they start to earn over time.
And the organization, that's the critical fact.
Yeah.
And
those that aren't doing it, I think, will not earn the same level of credibility. So while it is up to each individual to disclose, and there's no hard and fast rules or concrete of what applies to when, if I am asking myself the question, I wonder if I should disclose that, chances are I'll write, well, if I'm even asking myself the question, I probably should. And then if I do this now habitually, because there are procedures in place that either are asking me or reminding me or whatever, I have a feeling, I'm just guessing, it's up to each individual's own interpretation, but I have a feeling that my credibility is going to rise over time. They can. That's just my thinking on it. It's a theory.
Oh, and I support that, absolutely. And your definition, your litmus test was quite correct. If I'm questioning myself on this issue and it's kind of niggling me, then that means I need to do this. If it's not, if I question myself and say, no, I don't really need to, then I know the answer.
And what we can't do is police against those that are wanting to purposely, when they ask themselves this question, how do I hide it? There's nothing we can do, to that.
Exactly.
But I think over time, their own credibility will suffer as a result. But
well, and that's the embarrassment aspect that we hope that, that it would be so embarrassing that should something come out like that, and people kept, a little bit of finger-pointing going on behind their back, well, he or she did this or that, and that would be very uncomfortable, I think, and I'm hopeful that will be the factor that will push people away from trying to sneak things through, so to speak.
Yeah.
I can't, we're talking about.
That's right. That's right. So it's all about improving the integrity of ICANN, which is made up, of individuals. It's not like ICANN makes cars or anything or something like that. It's just an organization made up of individuals, and the more we can do in what our little role here is the GCOT to add integrity as part of the individual process, we hope over time it adds up for ICANN to be considered legitimate and credible, right? That's all theory.
No, that's exactly the point.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't have anything else on... let me page back down. Anything else prior to Section 5? Does anybody else? And Julie, are you comfortable?
Yes, I think I've captured this. Ray, Julie, I should note that we are now 3 minutes before the top of the hour, and I think that you had wanted an up 10, so I don't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, yeah, very good. Okay, is Ken Bauer on the call?
Hi, Ray. Yes, I am.
Okay, hang tight there, okay?
Sure.
Real quickly on Section 5 here, to keep going, this is going to be a discussion, I think. I'm questioning whether we want ICANN staff to review relevant party statements of interest to ensure truthfulness and completeness. I'm wondering if that's more of a... In other words, ICANN, I kind of see ICANN staff or ICANN as the organization's role here, administrative. Here's the site, here's the statement of interest, here is where we asked for them. But this is a little different now than evaluating the truthfulness or completeness. I think that should be a chair obligation. I would, for example, if I'm a chair and I know I need to get these statements of interest, I'm going to look at them and I'm going to see are they complete, whether they're truthful, that's judgment, but are they complete? When we get into things like truthfulness and then saying I can't staff, now I think we're sort of, in my view, just sort of adding a complication to this. Any thoughts on this?
This is Ron. My first thought is only that the chair and the vice chair have got so much going on that, you know, would they, this, it's like another added burden. So the first thing that came to mind was maybe the chair and vice chair would convene a three-party group, but then we have to get into all of the issues about how that, you know, a group would be or a team would be convened to do this review. So it is a pretty, it's a tricky one indeed. But if we're just asking the staff to review the statement of interest and review the in relation to what issue has been raised and come back and say that in our view the person who's brought our attention to this is correct or incorrect, that's all we're asking them to do as staff people. You know, take, you have time, you get, you're getting paid, you know, to do this, to do work, please just do a review and see if this is true or not true and report that back to the chair. Then the chair and the vice chair can start to make that determination themselves. They, in other words, they can look at it more closely, but someone's going to do the legwork to say, okay, this is what was published, this is what's been said. Maybe take the staff out of it just to deliver that information to the chair and vice chair and say that here's what was printed, here's what was stated. So then at least the chair and vice chair then can pick it up from there. But someone has to do that work to make sure they gather that information just to ease the burden on the chair and vice chair.
So let me think here. If I have to complete a statement of interest, who am I sending it to? Am I sending it to the GNSO secretariat? Am I sending it to an ICANN staff person? Am I sending it to a chair?
Staff, as I understand, the staff is going to create a form, and we're going to fill that out, and those forms are going to get published in the, you know, the same place all the time. So all we're... there's just a form there that we go and fill out, so there's no staff involvement per se.
Right. So, but when I fill it out, am I submitting it online? Is it an online form? I fill it in.
Yeah.
And I click submit, then it goes to who?
It goes into the statement of interest box. As you'd said, a drop-down menu A to Z, and there it goes. You know, so I'm now published in there.
Okay. So now what we got to watch here, here's what I'm thinking. what we got to watch is somebody puts in, Bugs Bunny, working for Walt Disney World.
Yeah,
fictitious
thing. No, I think it should be a given that people, you know, staff will review that from time to time to make sure there's nothing going on, as staff does the website today.
Yeah.
But that's a lesser issue. Let's take our own work team, for example. Let's take our own work team. And here I am talking about this and that, but I haven't disclosed something. And Wolf Ulrich says, geez, you know, this doesn't sound quite right to me. It seems to me that there would be the way this would work is that he would come to the chair, who would then ask staff to please pull the SOI on Ron Andruff and send it to him, and Wolf Ulrich would submit his concern, and those two documents would be gathered by staff and given to you, Ray, to look at and say, this does look a little strange, or no, from my point of view, I don't think it's that far off. But then it would come up in the next call that there was a concern raised. Wouldn't even have to say it came from Wolf Ulrich. There was a concern raised that there was an SOI situation. I've looked at the SOI document, and I've looked at the concern that was posted. And in my view, I don't think that exists. And that gets entered in the record and moves on.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm going a roundabout way. For the next call, I don't think we're going to get this done today. But for the next call, let's think about this concept where staff ensures truthfulness. I can get there with completeness. In other words, all the questions are answered. But I'm having difficulty with staff will ensure truthfulness.
This is Aubrey. I'm about to drop off, but one of the things I'd recommend is that we're thinking about staff doing verification of information or being requested by chairs to verify information. But any notion of adjudication or further processing is done by the chairs. So the staff can be requested to verify information.
Okay, great. Don't drop off yet, Aubrey. Ken, real quick, how are you making out with Samantha in terms of our ability to get the abstention procedures in front of the OSC?
Yes, I'll be brief. On the 10th, I sent a note to the team basically outlining four categories of issues that Sam had identified early on. I won't go through those now. You can see that. In the last 7 days, we have been through three formal sort of iterations where I responded, and then there's another set, and then I respond, and there's another set, and we're on our fourth one. The good news is that Dan and Sam are both engaged, and I am just about today to send back the fourth iteration. This is a very complicated procedure, as you guys well know, and there are just a lot of little sentence fragments here and there, and making sure that what we set up here follows at the bottom. And I think there's just a continued, I don't want to say nervousness, but concern that we make sure we tie this all down properly. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're iterating.
Well, let me ask this. Based on your discussions, would they be comfortable with us sending it to the OSC that it may not be in complete form, but it has been through legal review, and we do not anticipate any material changes?
I would ask you to hold off on that. Let me get through this last iteration, because, you know, there are a couple of questions that are coming up now. Like, for example, Dan's asking, you may remember that we provided a limitation on proxy where we said only one proxy per counselor per issue at a time, right? Well, we didn't do anything like that on the temporary alternate. And so he said, well, shouldn't we have some kind of limitation there, right? So, that, for example, I'm a counselor, and I've got a temporary alternate for one issue, and because I have an abstention issue on another issue, I've got another temporary alternate sitting in for me on a different issue. And these are the kinds of things that, you know, it's hard to think through them all, but every time a different set of eyes gets on it, you see a different twist, right? And so what we're really doing is just working through all these permutations and combinations, and the document will really be tight when we're finished with it.
All right, well, okay, but let me just throw out this comment to you. It's constructive. It's intended to be constructive. So what I'm hearing is that we're having legal people make a determination on day-to-day practices, which is different than a legal interpretation and getting their blessing of how this can fit within the bylaws and fit within the rules of procedure consistent to ICANN's organization's obligations or what have you. Now we've got what we have, the legal people interpreting in permutations of how this may work in practice. And I'm not saying there isn't some blurring there, but I'm not sure. Now, if you were to say, well, ICANN staff operational people are looking at this and giving us these kinds of comments, I might say that's a good set of eyes for that, to come up with these permutations. But I'm questioning whether legal is the appropriate place to be coming up with these permutations and how this will work in practice, and then coming up with the recommendations of how to alter how it will work in practice. Does this make sense to anybody, what I'm saying?
Yes.
Or am I way off on a tangent here?
This is Ken, and what you said makes sense based on all my prior business and industry experience. But I have the impression, and maybe Rob can speak to this, that in ICANN, when it comes to things like procedures and bylaws and other matters of that type, legal provides more than just legal opinion. They also provide sort of managerial views. That's just an impression.
See, I would want the OSC doing this. This is exactly where I would want those guys who are very versed in GNSO procedures and practices and been through the wars and the trials and tribulations. This is where I want that discussion to take place. Well, what happens if there's more than one alternate and a different occasion, whatever these permutations may be? I think what I got to watch here is the OSC doesn't come back to us and say, well, what is legal doing coming up with these practices? We're great that you went to legal and got their blessing in terms from a legal perspective, but I'm not too crazy, GCOT, how you went to legal and got operational advice from them. I'm not sure I like that idea. That's where I'm getting concerned.
Ray, that's not the impression I have had in reviewing the correspondence that's going back and forth here. The key reason for reaching out to legal is to make sure that the ultimate processes are consistent with the bylaws, and that's certainly the tone and expressions of feedback that I'm perceiving from legal. They aren't dictating anything at this point, but they are providing feedback and suggestions that say, you need to tighten this up because it does create potential concerns or areas of potential pitfalls.
Okay, I want to stop you there, Robin. I'm trying to be difficult here, but I just want to make sure we don't get trapped between the OSC and staff here.
Okay.
I think it's important.
I'll be back.
Okay, Aubrey. And I think this is an important point, which is, I just lost my train of thought.
Well, yeah, you won't be trapped because, I mean, they're going to provide, they're providing their perspective and feedback. When Ken and I come back with that document, you say, no, we want to go this way. I mean, the challenge that we don't want to run into is to have you guys go through all the work and the recommendations, provide them to the OSC, have the OSC approve them, the GNSO Council approve them, and then have legal come back and say, yeah, but that's not consistent with the bylaws. We'd like to know now if it's not consistent with the bylaws, and if it's not, then to make adjustments either to make it consistent or to advise you guys it's not consistent, so we also have to recommend changes to the bylaws.
Okay, so we're not there yet. We don't have that sort of legal opinion that what has been presented to them is in their view, consistent to the bylaws. In other words, legal is not comfortable with us getting this in front of the GNSO Council via the OSC. Legally.
I think what we are doing is working with the legal team. They make recommendations, and we're trying to be very careful in the discussions that, you know, we are adhering to the bylaws in the process. They may, and I've seen Ken going back and forth, they will make suggestions often as anyone will do to say, you know, maybe you want to think about doing it a different way, or maybe you want to consider this operational change. We recognize where the line is, and that's part of the dialogue that Ken is diplomatically referring to, because there may be cases where they're making recommendations, and we may not necessarily agree with them because they are operational issues.
Yeah, there is a blurring. I'm not dismissing the concept that there can be a blurring. What I am trying to, though, sort of articulate is we are on a time frame, and I do want to get this thing. I think we've hashed it out as a work team very, very soundly, and I'm trying to stand up for the work team members here by saying, you know, I really want to get this thing in front of the OSC, and I'm looking to find out if legal has a problem with that. Because we want to get this thing in front of the council as part of Nairobi. I don't want to create false deadlines.
Ray,
I'm sorry.
I hear that question, and I am on literally today. I will be sending this additional iteration. I will ask that question of Dan.
Thank you. That the
GCOT team wants to give a version, and is this version close enough now to give to the OSC? Recognizing there might be some additional changes, but substantively it's okay. I'll ask that question.
Ron,
all right, so
Ron,
I'll put you on the
Ron.
Spot, Ken. Yeah, Ron, thank you.
Yeah, no, I just want to support what you're saying. I think, you know, let's be all clear about this. You know, we couldn't get any of this work done without staff support, and we really value everything that's going on from both Rob and Judy and Julie and all of you guys, Ken. But the bigger issue here is, we as a community have to kind of come to terms with what those issues are. So I would support what Ray has suggested, that we send this to the OSC. We say that there is a discussion with regard to that element, and if you could just kind of define what that element is, that the community can come up with this decision. Because there is this very prevalent feeling that there was a time not so long ago when there was nobody on staff and there was a big bottleneck of us jamming stuff towards staff and they couldn't get it back to us. Now we've got this massive group of staff and consultants dealing with stuff, but there's a perception that all of a sudden there's a takeover happening here. Staff is making recommendations to the board. Staff is making recommendations here and there. And so we really want to make sure that this work is done by the work team and by the OSC, and then it's clarified on the legal perspective from the legal department. So let's move down that road. And I heard what you said. You're going to put that question forward today, but I'm saying it's not a question to Dan Halloran and that team. It's a statement that we are going to send this to the OSC with this caveat that we need to really finalize this. But it's really up to the OSC to take this discussion to the next level.
I'll tell you what, I want to just back up. I don't necessarily disagree with you, Ron, but I will take that one tea leaf that Ken offered. If we had legal come back and say, from a legal perspective, we're we don't have material issues. Not that something may not arise. If we, I would be more comfortable than going to the OSC. That,
yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm suggesting exactly.
You're saying
that,
the same thing?
Yes,
oh, okay.
I am.
All right.
Yeah.
So yes, Ken, if you could ask that question, if Dan comes back with no, I don't think it's a good idea. I think at the same time, then we should, you know, from a legal perspective, we should take as a work team under consideration and not send it to the OSC just yet. Does anyone disagree? Ron, what do you think of that?
Oh, I'm not going to push back too hard. I just want to draw that distinction that's really important that the community is pushing the stuff forward, and then staff and legal are you know, making sure that it's all correct. That's the point I'm trying to draw here.
Yeah, so I'm just looking for a little bit of scope when we ask the question of why or why not. If it's why not, it's because from their legal position, it's not yet a good idea. If we can get even a little bit more detail, that'd be great, as it pertains to the bylaws, as it pertains to whatever their legal issue hang-up is. That kind of explanation would be helpful to us as a work team. If it's because, well, we haven't worked out all the permutations of how this may work in practice,
Exactly.
That,
exactly. Because the OSC is anxious to get this stuff, and we need to get the GNSO moving according to these new operational procedures, and we cannot continue to delay because there's some... Exactly what you just said, permutations that need to be reviewed. We'll review those permutations.
Okay, now, Ken, have I put you in too much of a difficult position? Is this something I need to get involved with?
I don't think so at this point, and I'll lean on Rob, and he and I will work together on that communication.
Right.
Too.
Okay. Okay, I'd appreciate that, and if you need my involvement in any way, please don't hesitate to ask.
I'll be guided by that. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else? My suggestion is our next call we pick up with Section 5 on. We made pretty good progress today on this statement of interest. Any objection to picking up the next call where we left off?
Ray, this is Julie. I do have a question.
Yes.
So, when is our next call scheduled? I will note that I will be, if it's in 2 weeks' time, I will be traveling that day. That Wednesday to Nairobi, so I'm not sure I'll be able to do the call at the usual time. I was wondering if you might want to do a call next week.
Good. Yeah, I forgot because we kind of got off our rotation last week's attendance level. Yeah, I'm all for it. Let's pick it up again on the 24th, right? Yeah, the 24th. Does anybody have any objection to that? And then go back to the 2 weeks from there. Which, of course, we'll have a March 7th meeting in between. But in terms of the teleconferences, pick it up from the 24th every 2 weeks.
That sounds good. I've noted that, Ray. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Ray, this is Ken. May I interject one other question?
Yeah, please.
What date by which you would want to send the document to the OSC? Can I reference anything in particular?
Okay. So let's think about this. That's a good question. We want to get it in front of the council. Are we even giving the OSC time with what, Nairobi's, what, 2 weeks away? Right?
Yes.
Well, the council meets on Saturday, the 6th of March, and the 7th, right? I'm not sure if it's those 2 days that we would have to. Yeah, I think you have to go back 8 days before you can put something before the council.
For vote.
Actually,
well,
and
right.
Ray, this is Julie. I think that actually the OSC is probably going to want to discuss it at their meeting on the 7th.
Yeah.
And in which case they'll want to discuss it, and then they can decide at that point if they think it's ready to go on the council agenda, although I don't think it would be on the agenda, the Nairobi council agenda for a vote, but probably for discussion.
Yeah, let's shoot for that. I mean, that's going to be our recommendation to the OSC is to get this into GNSO Council discussion as part of Nairobi. There's really, it's not realistic to think that this can be voted on now. Maybe some on the OSC will think differently, who are council members, and who knows. But right now, our expectations, I think, should be to get this to the OSC as soon as we possibly can. And we'd like to do it as is.
My communication,
yeah, that's fine. We'd like to do it today, as is, but the only reason we're not is because we just don't know from ICANN staff legal if they have a legal issue or not. That's the only thing stopping us. And from there, the objective is for the OSC to do what it does in its review, and our recommendation would be to the OSC to get in front of the council for discussion as part of Nairobi. Does that help?
Yeah, I'll suggest that we want to give the OSC one full week before, well, two full weeks, I guess, 22nd through the 5th, before Nairobi, and so we really want to get a version to them no later than the 22nd. How's that sound?
Fair.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other business? All right, if not, let's go ahead and, well, first of all, thank everybody for joining today and adjourn our call and end the recording.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Ray, can you stay
yes.
on for a second?
Yes.
A quick question. With regard to Nairobi, there's a smaller group meeting there. I'm seeing messages come from Chuck and Philip to ask if I might chair the OSC meeting. You still with me, Ray?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just everything went dead for a second. So the point is, I would assume that Avery then will give the report for our work team?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I just want to make sure that you follow up with her on that just to make sure that she's informed that she'll be making that report.
Good point.
Because I'm going to respond back to Chuck now and just say that I'll chair that meeting on behalf of him and Philip taking on later. Okay?
Yes, very good. Very good.
Okay.
I'll follow up with Aubrey on that. Great.
Very good. All right.
Thank you, Ron.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.